Hello, welcome to the Catholic Link podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I'm your host, Father George Elliott, and today I'm joined by Grayson Quay. Grayson is a former editor at The Week and The Daily Caller. His writing has appeared in National Review, the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette, Newsweek, The American Conservative, The Spectator World, and other outlets. Grayson earned his MA from Georgetown University in 2019. Grayson, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Father.
So, you recently published something that really caught my eye, and it was specifically about transhumanism. And I thought to myself, that is such an important topic to talk about. And I don't think most people understand what it is. And you kind of, you go into this concept of kind of being a disincarnate being, or a disincarnate soul. And so can you just kind of intro us, like, what is transhumanism? What do you mean by disincarnate soul? Just so that we can kind of have a context of what's even being talked about right now.
Sure. So in my new book, The Transhumanist Temptation, I use the definition of transhumanism that Julian Huxley, who coined the term in its modern sense, used. Julian Huxley was actually the brother of Aldous Huxley, who wrote Brave New World, which gives you a lot of examples of what transhumanism looks like. But Julian Huxley basically said transhumanism is the idea that humanity has, without asking for the job, been appointed as the managing director of man's own evolution. So what used to be, you know, in his view, this blind, unguided physical process of evolution is now going to be guided by humans and the application of the technologies they've built. Now, in the book, I sort of trace this further back and I try to look at, well, why should Catholics be concerned about this? What's the problem with using technology to try to make people's lives better? And there's no problem with trying to use technology to make people's lives better. The problem is using technology to redefine what human nature is. So if you go back to St. Thomas Aquinas, who reaches back to Aristotle, and there's similar concepts even in the Hebrew Bible and the book of Proverbs, what you come away with is that humankind has a particular nature that we've been created with. And because we are the kind of beings that we are, there's a particular type of excellence that's proper to that. So Aristotle will say that we know what a chair is, and so we know what a good chair is because of the form it takes and the thing it does. So as there's an excellence to being a chair or making a chair, there's also an excellence to being a man and to being a human and living a good life. It's not the case that we know what a good chair is, but there's just no definition of what a good person is, and we just have to make that up for ourselves, which is what modern philosophy will tell you. And if you go into the Old Testament, you find the same idea. The word chokmah, that means wisdom in Proverbs, is actually used to describe the workmen who work on the tabernacle also. So it means something like craft or skill. So the way that there's an art to wood carving or embroidery in the Old Testament, there's the same idea that there's an art to living and being a man and searching out the way and the order that God has laid out for us to live according to. And that's what leads to our flourishing as human beings. And the danger is when we step outside of that and try to say, no, I'm going to decide what determines my flourishing. I'm going to decide what the proper way to live is and what the good life is for a human. And that's, I think, goes all the way back to the temptation that Satan gave to Eve in the garden, which is that you can be as gods, which, you know, is the promise that God gives to us, right? That we can become partakers of the divine nature. But the insidious part is you can have that on your own terms. You can have that apart from a relationship with God. You can decide what that means for you.
Well, yeah, that was a phenomenal explanation there. Super compact. Just to review, to make sure that everybody kind of caught that. So, right, transhumanism really comes down to, it seems, correct me if I'm wrong, it's this kind of desire to define humanism, or to define what it means to be a human, right? And that's clearly against this understanding of having a creator and God teaching us what it is to be a good human being. And kind of that's what's at the core of the issue. Is that right?
Yeah, sure. So one, you know, easy example that I always use is, if you take human nature as a given, if you take some kind of fixed idea of what a human being is and what flourishing looks like for that type of being, then you can apply technology to try to enhance that human flourishing, and you're completely safe in doing so. So if my arm is broken, or if I have a cancerous growth in my body, you can look at what a healthy, flourishing human looks like, and then you can look at me with these issues and say, okay, clearly this is not what a healthy, flourishing human being looks like. You know, my cancer might be natural, I'm doing air quotes, in the sense that it happened without external interference. But it wouldn't be natural in a classical sense, which means a thing fulfilling its own nature, you know, an acorn becoming an oak tree, flourishing as the thing that it is. So medical science would then step in and try to cure me, to get rid of my cancer or to set my broken arm. If you don't have a fixed idea of human nature and of a human flourishing proper to that nature, now the guardrails are off. I can go in and instead of saying, set my broken arm, I can say, give me a third arm sprouting between my shoulder blades. I can say, I don't like being a man, make me into a woman. I can say, well, I couldn't say, but a woman could say, you know, I'm having a healthy monthly cycle, which is normal and part of what it means to be a healthy woman. I don't like that, though. I don't want to be fertile. I want you to take a biological process that is healthy and is working, and I want you to give me a pill that will disrupt that. These are all examples of transhumanism.
That's excellent. Yeah. And I think that's starting to kind of transition a little bit also to the term that you talk about with a disincarnate being. So what does that mean? And how does that play out within kind of transhumanism?
Yeah. So a Catholic understanding would always be that the kind of embodied beings we are, we're a union of body and soul, and that the kind of embodied beings God created us as, gives us some indication of how we should live and what we should do. For a transhumanist, this is all, you know, the physical bodies we have are just accidents of evolutionary processes, and they don't really have any normative value. They call this the kind of is-ought distinction, that the kind of being we are doesn't give us any insight into how we should live. So once you've accepted this dichotomy between is and ought, then your embodied self is meaningless. All that matters is your will or your desires. So we sort of shift from this understanding of humanity as embodied beings to this understanding of humanity that focuses on the primacy of the individual will, of the individual desires. It's almost a deification of the will, which is why, you know, we've seen the shift that I talked about in how medicine works, where you can go in and tell a doctor, like, I want you to do something to me that's actually harmful to me. That takes a part of my body or a biological process that's working the way it's supposed to be and removes that or harms it or disrupts it because it's in accordance with my will. And this also is what lies behind, you know, a lot of current discourse around abortion, where the sort of main argument that abortion rights advocates use is this bodily autonomy argument. Nobody can really argue in good faith anymore that an unborn child isn't a child at any stage, you know, from the moment of conception. It's a, you know, it's very obviously a member of the human species with a unique genetic code. The only argument they really have left is this insistence that my will takes primacy. You know, I own my body and I shouldn't have to let my body be used to provide sustenance to my own unborn child. It's this very strange argument that sort of casts the unborn child as like a home invader or something. And doesn't really acknowledge that there are certain duties that we have that flow from what kind of embodied beings we are. And once you accept this idea of the primacy of the will and sort of downgrade the importance of the body and who we are, then you end up in all kinds of strange places where the technology we have now is actually exacerbating that problem or encouraging that mindset. Because now you can spend a huge amount of your day using smartphones or apps or other things that basically encourage you to act as a discarnate being. You know, when you pull out your smartphone, it's not technically a transhumanist technology in the sense that it's not physically attached to your body, but we've come a long way toward that goal. You know, think about decades ago when a computer took up a whole building, then it was in an office in your house, your computer room, if anyone showing my age here. And then you had a laptop, which you could carry around and set up on flat surfaces, but you couldn't pull it out on the bus or the train. Now you have the smartphone and, you know, the next logical steps are kind of wearables or glasses, and then some kind of implant that, you know, you can just control by thinking. We've already seen things like Neuralink that give you some of those options already, though it's in a rudimentary stage at this point. But at that point, you know, we'll really have changed humanity's kind of faculties and senses, and almost incorporated a new sense organ into human biology that enables you to access this kind of placeless, infinite, virtual world or sphere in which you are not an embodied human in a particular place with particular people. You're sort of everywhere and nowhere at the same time. And I think you can see the consequences of living more as that kind of being than as an embodied being, in that it just seems to war against our humanity and erode our flourishing. You can see the statistics for young children who have been exposed to smartphones and social media their whole life. They have higher rates of suicide, higher rates of mental illness. They don't seem interested in going out and hanging out with friends or getting their driver's licenses or dating. These are all really sad things. And you also see kind of a pipeline into transgenderism and other weird things like that, because if you feel as though the fullest expression of you is the you that you are when you're interacting online or on forums or on social media sites, then of course you're going to attach less importance to your own body and feel as though it's totally fine to change or alter that to fit how you feel, the same way you would alter your avatar in a video game. In fact, there are, you know, transhumanist thinkers. Martine Rothblatt is one who comes to mind, who's a male to female transgender who wrote a book called From Transgender to Transhuman, basically saying, you know, transgenderism is sort of a midway point that we're at. The end goal for Rothblatt is something he refers to as freedom of form, which really is the sort of total freedom to define what you'll look like and how you'll present yourself to the world that you would get in a video game, where you have the ability to design your game character from the ground up. Only for Rothblatt, you know, the eventual goal is that freedom will also apply to the physical world, where you can, you know, grow yourself a custom made body in a vat and then kind of download your consciousness into that and then upload it back to virtual reality. And yeah, it's very bizarre, very fast, but once you throw out the idea of natural law and the importance of human embodiment, and all this wisdom that's come down to us from the Old Testament and Aristotle and St. Thomas Aquinas, you've removed all the guardrails, like I said, and there's really the only thing holding you back from transhumanism at that point is the level of technological development. We really don't have any philosophical resources left in mainstream society to restrain the use of these technologies.
It just, as you're speaking, it reminds me of, you know, like The Matrix or the Avatar movie, you know, like any of those movies. It seems like those almost kind of depict that, you know, the extreme end of where transhumanism could hypothetically go. You know, I think with something, you know, when we sit down, we look at it in the light of truth and revelation, all of these things, you know, transhumanism is this kind of absurd thing. But obviously, it's being accepted in our society and in our culture, which means that, you know, if nobody is, or if society as a whole isn't just balking at this idea, that means that society as a whole already has accepted the underpinnings of this type of thought, right? Some of these like fundamental ideas that precede being able to really accept this disembodied human concept and transhumanism. And that means that we as, you know, even Catholics, like we have to accept that, yeah, you know what? There are probably things that I do or that I think that are actually beginning to go down this path. And so, you know, what are some of those things that we see, you know, even good Catholics, you know, I'm doing the air quotes again, you know, good Catholics saying, yeah, that they regularly say or do.
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of ways in which transhumanism has kind of infiltrated people's minds. One of the examples I give in the book is last year there was a Supreme Court case, a state Supreme Court case in Alabama, where Basically, the state has a wrongful death statute that applies to unborn children. So if a woman's in a car accident while she's pregnant and loses her baby, she can recover damages from the driver who hit her. The state Supreme Court basically said, we're going to apply this to IVF clinics too. So if a careless worker at the IVF clinic knocks over a test tube and destroys some of the embryos that you paid to have created, you can sue the clinic and recover damages for this. The response from the Democrats was kind of what you would expect, which was, you know, this is a Handmaid's Tale dystopia, you know, on and on and on, the usual stuff. What was surprising was the number of people on the right who reacted negatively to this as well. I say negatively, even hysterically at times. You know, Alabama's about the reddest red state you can think of, you know, pro-life Republican governor, pro-life Republican supermajority in the legislature. And yet, you know, the legislature and the governor immediately leapt into action to amend the wrongful death statute to say, well, no, the IVF industry is exempt now, because most people don't understand how anyone could be opposed to IVF at this point. The sort of transhumanist idea that there's nothing wrong with separating procreation from the marital act, that there's nothing wrong with changing the relationship from parent and child to consumer and custom ordered product, that there's nothing wrong with creating all of these embryos, these excess embryos, and then destroying them because, you know, your will, your desire for a child is what matters. And those embryos are not conscious yet and can't exert a will of their own to counter yours. So they lose in this kind of weird existential power game. These are all just kind of presuppositions people have accepted, and it's very sad. So I think that, you know, Catholics can do a number of things to be aware of the encroachment of transhumanism. One is, I think that when, you know, someone comes to you and tells you, you know, yeah, my wife and I have decided we're going to do IVF or hire a surrogate, to just, you know, don't just kind of go, huh, that's great. I mean, speak up and tell them that that's wrong. You know, they might get angry. It'll be awkward. It might cost you the friendship, but you have a chance there to at least make them think about it. And maybe they never have before. Maybe it's never even occurred to them that this could be morally objectionable, and you have an opportunity to prevent a grave evil from taking place. The other one is being cognizant of how you use digital technology. I think especially keep smartphones and social media apps away from your children for as long as you can. These are created by companies that do not have an interest in your child's human flourishing. They want to strip mine their attention span and dopamine system for profit. And they want to drag them, you know, away from their family, away from the principles and the faith that you're trying to impart to them, and have them be raised online, because that's what's helps their bottom line. And I also think that this is where, you know, government should step in and hopefully pass state and maybe even federal laws, kind of keeping children off of social media and keeping them away from smartphones for a while. Just kind of putting the thumb on the scale for an idea of human flourishing that's not determined by the profit motive. Yeah. And then finally, down the road, there's, you know, we're really staring down a brave new world. It's hard to say what'll happen. I'll just give one example, though, where there's a show, I think it's on Netflix, called Altered Carbon. I haven't seen it really, so I can't recommend it one way or the other, but I've talked about it with some people. And in the show, there's a technology that's sort of a kind of a data stick almost, that's kind of implanted at the back of your head, and it processes all your memories. And it has some applications, like in the workplace, where you can sort of take something you've seen and turn it into a video file and send it to a coworker. But the Catholic Church actually made a ruling on this technology in this, you know, far future alternate reality of this show, and said you can use this as a tool, you know, to send things you've seen to friends or use it in the workplace or whatever, but it has to have a hard lock on it. So you can't remove it from your skull, put it in another body, and then have that body be you. I'm doing air quotes. Mm-hmm. So I think that, you know, the church as a whole and then Catholics individually need to be thinking about how far can we go with these new technologies? Where do we need to draw the line? And how much power do we have to kind of negotiate with the outside world and extract concessions like that? Because you wouldn't be able to have that hard lock on the technology if that weren't an accommodation that the tech company made to the Catholic Church, the same way that, you know, there were enough Catholics that McDonald's had to create the Filet-O-Fish, or there are enough Jews in certain cities that they make elevators that stop on every single floor because they can't push the elevator buttons on the Sabbath. Eventually, I think if transhumanism progresses enough in society, anyone who refuses to augment themselves will end up kind of as a second-class citizen and being viewed as a drag on society and as some kind of Luddite. But at least in the near to midterm, there's an opportunity to hold firm, draw a line on the sand, and really extract concessions for ourselves and preserve authentic humanity as a widespread option for people.
All right. This is awesome. I mean, there's so much to talk about within this topic. So where can they find out more?
Yeah. So my book, The Transhumanist Temptation, How Technology and Ideology Are Reshaping Humanity and How to Resist, is available from Sophia Institute Press. If you go to sophiainstitute.com/transhuman, you can find it there. It's also available on Amazon, though, as always, buying direct from the publisher is best. It's also available as an ebook and an audiobook. I don't narrate the audiobook, so if you hate my voice, good news. And then you can follow me on Twitter at Hemingquay. That's Hemingquay.
This has been the Catholic Link Podcast, the podcast for busy Catholics. I've been joined by Grayson Quay. I'm Father George Elliott. If you'd like to find more great shareable content by Catholics for Catholics, check out catholic-link.org. Thanks for joining, and God bless.